sort of sparse on attendance today, that must mean that the only things we're talking about everybody agrees with. So we'll try to make this as quick as possible. We are going to start with a work session on House Bill 2409.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2409 comes to you from the Representative Lane Shuttley for the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. You have before you the Dash 2 amendments. These are amendments that the Court Administrator's Office, the Chief Justice, the State Police, the Sheriff's Association, the Chiefs of Police Association worked on and all support. If I could just walk through them, they in page one of the amendments, they do some housekeeping by adding to court facilities, Circuit Court, Court of Appeals, Supreme Court, or the Tax Court. And further definition. And going over to page two, basically it sets forth a basic three-part system. Notwithstanding section A, peace officer is defined or federal officer may possess a weapon in the court facility if the officer is acting in official capacity and is officially on duty, is carrying a weapon that is the employing agency of the officer has authorized the officer to carry, and is in compliance with any security procedures established under Sections 3 and 4 of the bill. Then, two, a judge may prohibit a peace officer or a federal officer from possessing a weapon in a courtroom. I think there's a distinction here between a courtroom and a court facility. Mm-hmm. A courtroom is generally considered the bailiwick of the judge that's sitting there on the bench. The court facility is a building which can include more than just the courthouse. It can include, and often is, includes the clerk's office. Then a notice of prohibition of possession of a weapon by an officer in the courtroom must be posted outside the entrance. This is so that a police officer is well aware of what the process and procedures are in that particular courtroom. Then in Section 3, a presiding judge of the judicial district may establish procedures regulating the possession of weapons in a court facility. Then in Section 8 of 3, it says a procedure must be established through a state court security improvement plan. You may remember this was one of the main points for the law enforcement community, that they wanted consistency as it relates to court facilities throughout the state. And then once again, under B, notice must be posted at the entrance to the court facility. Then finally, a judge may establish procedures regulating the possession of a weapon in the courtroom. That is in keeping with the section above, which says a judge may prohibit in his or her own courtroom the fact that they may also regulate the procedures in his or her own courtroom. But once again, they must post notice outside. Bob Smith called me this morning, and I understand that he cannot make it, neither can Russ Spencer, and neither can Kevin Campbell, whose wife is having a baby today. But Kingsley Click is here.
Wow. And I guess what I'd like to do now is just ask if there is there a discussion among the committee about the amendments. This has been a well-worked-out effort on the part of all the people involved. The thing that I thought was interesting when I looked at the amendments was not the change in the law, but if you go up and I haven't ever really spent much time focusing on the definition of a weapon under the ORS, and I thought it was sort of interesting to see that it includes a dirk, a dagger, an ice pick, a slingshot, metal knuckles, or any similar instrument, and down lower it can be a club, bat, baton, billy club, bludgeon, knob carry. And I was going to ask Representative Wilson if he knows what a knob carry is.
Yes, I do. I prefer just to leave that in Josephine County.
So anyway, very interesting definitions. I haven't heard the old ice pick one in quite some time. So anyway, that's where we're at. The chair would move the adoption of the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2409. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, the amendments are adopted. Chair would move House Bill 2409 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? As amended. Thank you, Representative Backlund. Okay, hearing none. Ann, would you call the roll?
Representative Ackerman?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Bell?
Aye.
Representative Gringo?
Aye.
Representative Shelley?
Excused.
Representative Michelle Walker?
Excused.
Representative Vicki Walker?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Chair,
excused.
Chair,
aye. House Bill 2409, as amended, moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any volunteer to carry this bill to the floor?
Representative Wilson should carry this one.
Well, certainly I will.
You want to carry it, Carl?
Sure.
Okay, good. Representative Wilson.
Since he knows what all those weapons are.
Yeah, since you can describe what a dirk, a dagger, and an ice pick are, you'll carry the bill. There you go. Leave your ice, check your ice picks at the door. We'll now open a work session on House Bill 2419.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2419 comes to you from the request of Representative Jackie Winters and Representative Bob Jensen. We had this bill before us last Friday at full committee, and it requires the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission to amend its rules so that a person convicted of manufacturing substantial quantities of methamphetamines are not eligible for optional probation. The main change we have before you are the Dash 1 amendments. We had discussions last week as relates to amphetamines. In fact, in the next bill that we'll discuss, amphetamines were treated more seriously than methamphetamines. What I understand is that methamphetamines are considerably more serious substance than amphetamines, and I talked to Representative Winters, and she suggested that we remove amphetamines from the bill, and that's what this proposal does, the Dash 1 amendments. You may remember we had discussion around exactly.
Did.
I mean, amphetamines, I think, are not even mentioned in Chapter 475.
And I do recall that Representative Wilson was carrying this bill to a full committee when we started to engage in the discussion on the bill last session. Representative Wilson, do you have anything you want to add?
Not really, just other than to note that these bills are brought forward due to the plague of methamphetamine in the state of Oregon, what it does not only to the individual but the families of individuals. And this is seen as a measure that is going to begin to help us get the upper hand on the people who are involved in the manufacturing of that and subsequent effects that they play out in their community.
Okay. We have before us the Dash 1 amendment, which I think clarifies the bill and addresses the issues that we had to deal with. Issues that we had to deal with last time that created some of the confusion. So the chair would move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2419. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, the Dash 1s are adopted.
Ways and Means.
Well, that's right. Both these have Ways and Means referrals on them. Is there any further discussion on the amended version of House Bill 2419 that the committee feels like we need to engage in? Okay. Talkative lot today. Hearing none, then the chair would move House Bill 2419 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? All right. House Bill 2419 moves to Ways and Means. House Bill 2420.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2420 also comes to you, Representative Winters and Representative Jensen. It directs the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission to amend its rules that a person convicted of manufacturing substantial quantities of methamphetamines, their salts or isomers, receive a prison sentence rather than probation. The bill lists the sale, manufacture, delivery of 10 grams or more of the salts or isomers of methamphetamines as a Category 8 offense in the sentencing gridline block. You have before you the Dash 1 amendments. This once again removes the term amphetamines or its salts, optical isomers, or salts of its optical isomers. Once again, the reason for that is amphetamines are substantially not as addictive or serious as methamphetamines. And I once again spoke to Representative Winters on this, and she asked that those terms be removed. Otherwise, as the bill was originally drafted, amphetamines would be treated more seriously than methamphetamines.
Okay. Representative Wilson, you were assigned to carry this one. And as I recall, you had a definition for isomer.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Can you define for me an optical isomer?
That is an isomer that has something to do with optical qualities or quantities contained therein. Sir.
Good. Do you know?
I'm speaking in jest. We certainly have a better definition.
Yeah, right.
The wear and tear of the week has caused me to lose my definition.
Sure, that's fine. That's fine.
Representative
Lowe, you want to tell us what it is?
Memory serves. When you have a chemical formula, something is strung out. An optical isomer is either of the cis type or the trans type. And a cis type would have, like, the hydroxy sticking off the spine of the chemical on the left, and the trans would have it on the right. These are optical isomers. And the only reason why these things are significant is that in manufacturing copycat drugs, all you have to do to make it be a different drug is to shift the isomer to the other side of the spine or something like that, and you can do that in how you manufacture it or what chemicals you use to process it. And so that's probably more than you wanted to know.
I'm duly impressed, Representative. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's
you. Did you say chemistry in college?
I thought science.
Did you really? Good for you, Kathy.
Oh.
That was sort of Bill Nye the Science Guy-ish. That was really good. Well, we need to adopt the Dash 1 amendments, and so the chair would move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2420. Is there any discussion? Any objection? And this also has a Ways and Means referral, is that right, Council? So the chair would move House Bill 2420 to Ways and Means as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Bill moves to Ways and Means. Open a work session on House Bill 2207.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this comes from the Civil Committee, and I don't have this.
And our counsel for the Civil Committee, just walked out the door.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2207 provides appeal rights to taxpayers for certain failure to file penalties, permits taxpayer to prepare taxes, establishes due date for current tax years after the roll has been certified, takes effect on the 91st day following the adjournment sine die of regular session. No amendments. In subcommittee, and Representative Backlund is the carrier.
Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the council has explained this probably better than I could. Just to look at the summary, which is what I have basically done, it would appear to be one of those kinds of bills that that many of us would pass. So I think that's what I'm going to say.
Good. Thank you, Representative Backlund. Okay. Committee, are there any discussions about this bill? This came out of the civil sub, and I don't recall attending this meeting where this bill was discussed.
It came out with a unanimous vote.
It's a Department of Revenue bill, is that right? Why don't I bring up Mr. Phillips from the Department of Revenue? And here's counsel. You're saved, Mr. Taylor.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Phillips with the Oregon Department of Revenue. This bill is a feel-good taxpayer bill, if you will, and it does include appeal rights that were omitted from last session's, let's see, House Bill 2124, dealing with late filing penalties. That's in Section 1, and I didn't bring a handout today because I thought we were just in work session. So would you like me to go through the bill?
Oh, it would, you know, if you could give us maybe just a 1 minute description of what the bill does, Mr. Phillips, for those of us who weren't at the civil subcommittee, that might be helpful.
Okay, in the first three or four sections, it deals with adding those appeal rights for taxpayers who want to appeal, who have tried to appeal to the magistrate court, and who have been told that there's no jurisdiction there because of a omission in the law from last session. There's a section, there are sections that go on to clarify that, reducing the Section 5 allows the magistrate to reduce or waive the penalty, and it clarifies that other kinds of late filing penalties are appealable to the Board of Property Tax Appeals, but because of the unique timing involved with these types of penalties, it shifts it to the magistrate court. Section 7 allows taxpayers to prepay taxes for property taxes that are added to the following tax year's roll, and this is a situation where the tax collector is unable to accept payments, and the law would be changed to allow that to occur. Section 9 conforms that language to allow the taxpayers the authority to do that. It does not require the taxpayers prepay the tax, but it allows them to do so if they so desire. Section 10 is really the final policy issue of the bill, and that creates a due date in the statute for 311-208 corrections, which are corrections to the tax roll that are made after the roll is finalized by the county assessor, but before December 1st. They're corrections that are made to the current tax roll, not to previous year's rolls. And it's usually as a result of all of the new permits that are filed. People are filing permits, they're adding new property, they're building, they're constructing, and the assessor is trying to rush at the very end of the year to get all of these on the tax roll to reflect the added value. And so two sessions ago, I think it was the 97th session, a certain time period was extended for just certain types of new construction cases to December 1st, where the assessor can add that to the roll. The assessor then, and typically the tax bill has already gone out, so the assessor then would provide an appeal period for the notice, appeal period, and then a due date, and the statute really lacks a due date. So there's no clear indication when those taxes are due for these taxes that are being added. So Section 10 would provide for a due date. And that due date is the 16th of the month next following the month that the taxes are added to the roll.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Phillips, for that overview. Ms. Chartel has indicated to me that we have received notice from the Legislative Revenue Office that they would like this bill because of its, although it sounds like it would be rather small, but still would have a revenue impact, that we should put a subsequent referral on this bill and move it to the Revenue Committee. So that's something we're going to have to add by motion. Are there any questions of the committee for Mr. Phillips or any discussion about this bill? Okay. Mr. Phillips, were you aware that this bill was going to get a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee?
I was not certain that it would, but I thought it was possible.
Okay. That's
fine with us.
Not a problem for the department.
No, absolutely not.
Okay. All right. So that's where we're at. Representative Backlund.
I move House Bill 2207 to the Revenue Committee with a D-pass recommendation.
Representative Backlund moves House Bill 2207 to the Revenue Committee with a D-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? The bill moves to revenue. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2665.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Sorry about earlier. House Bill 2665 is not a major change at all. All it does is allow agencies to change certain non-substantive rules without following the APA outlined rulemaking procedures. This bill has a fiscal impact statement, and as you'll see from the fiscal impact statement, it reflects possible savings, although fiscal wasn't able to determine exactly what those would be, and there are -2 amendments that need to be adopted. For members of the civil sub, the -2 amendments include the changes that we made in the -1 amendments.
Thank you, Council. This bill really was just the product of a discussion, and it related originally to some an OLCC hearing where they had to go through the entire public hearings process in order to simply correct some grammatical errors in their administrative rules. And so the concept of the bill was to allow agencies the opportunity to correct grammatical errors, mistakes that would not affect, as you can see in the -2 amendments, correcting grammatical mistakes in a manner that does not alter the scope, application, or meaning of the rule, similarly to misspelled words and the like. It was really to give agencies the ability to make these technical changes without having to go through a full administrative rules, notice, and comment process. And for members of the civil sub, you'll recall that we had testimony from Boley, for example, the Bureau of Labor and Industries, who came forward and said that they have numerous sort of these kind of errors that have crept into their rules and they've chosen to sort of ignore them and not make the changes because they didn't want to expend the money and the resources to go through the notice and comment and hearing procedure in order to do so. So I do think this will be a positive, albeit a very small, but a positive thing that we can do to have them make those corrections without having to spend all that additional resource. So that's the concept.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would just point out to members of the committee, the Dash 2 amendments just tighten up even more that no substantive changes can be made.
Right. Yeah, there was never an intention that it would allow them to make any substantive law change or rule change without that process. It was purely the non-substantive changes we were aiming for. Is there any discussion about this bill or the Dash 2 amendments?
A good government bill, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Representative Walker. Chair would move in the adoption of the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2665. Is there any objection? Hearing none, the amendments are adopted. And the Chair would move House Bill 2665 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Ann, would you call the roll?
Representative Atherton?
Aye.
Representative
Baffin?
Aye.
Representative
Lowe?
Aye.
Representative
Shetterly?
Excused.
Representative
Bishop Walker?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Friedman?
Excused.
Chair Williams?
Aye. House Bill 2665 as amended moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I guess it's my bill, so I will carry it. We'll now open a work session on House Bill 2945.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2945 was part of a bill last session, a bigger bill that dealt with the Oregon Health Plan that ended up being vetoed by the governor. House Bill 2945 deals with making certain meetings involving healthcare representatives or directors that provide services to the Oregon Health Plan, making those subject to the public meeting laws. There is no revenue or fiscal impact, and you have the Dash 1 amendments in front of you. The Dash 1 amendments basically rewrite the bill to clarify that the bill is intended to cover these committees and subcommittees that are facilitated by state employees. It also clarifies that it's not intended to cover a situation where several state employees get together to meet, or even from the same agency or different agencies.
If I could, colleagues, this bill, the issue here was whether or not some meetings were in fact public meetings, and that's what brought this bill forward. In the discussion, you had a couple of state agencies come forward and say that they were concerned as to how the bill had been drafted, that it would include or might be broad enough to include two employees of an agency who were working on a project, all of a sudden, you know, in conversations with each other, turning that event into a public meeting. And so I believe the Dash 1 amendments were intended to address that. Similarly, there was some discussion about whether or not some of these meetings which were being facilitated by state agencies that included, you know, non-state employee types attending, but people who were, for example, under contract for services with the state, whether or not those meetings would be public meetings as defined, and Section 2 attempts to address that issue. So that's essentially the testimony and the purpose of the bill. Representative Lowe.
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if this applies to the situation where we're in session and a legislator wants some research done on an issue or has a proposal and asks for several people from OMAC to come to her office or his office and sit and discuss possibilities. Does this apply to that situation?
I don't believe so, Representative Lowe. I don't believe that I don't believe that that constitutes an advisory committee. I think there's a point you could get to where you might do that. I mean, if you formalize that process, I think you can potentially get yourself in a situation. I think, for example, when we appoint a work group to work on a bill and we do that sort of over the dais in this formal sort of a process, I think we can create an obligation for public notice of public meetings. So I think as legislators we must always be cognizant. I don't think this applies to an individual legislator who is asking somebody, including somebody from OMAP, for policy recommendations or for information about their programs. So I don't think it applies to the situation that you've described. But I think if you were to extend it, if you were to announce that you were going to organize some sort of a group for purposes of making these kind of recommendations, you could get yourself into a situation where you might be subject to public meetings. But as an individual legislator, asking people to come into your office and talk to you about policy issues, I don't believe that constitutes a public meeting.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
You may.
I think that it's important that we include your comments that you just made in the public record when we bring this bill to the floor.
Yeah, I'd be happy to point that out. I mean, I'd be happy to say that I don't think that that constitutes it. Other people may disagree with me. Representative Vicki Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I was just reading the amendment that replaces the bill, and it just applies to the medical assistance program, is my understanding, because I was just sitting here thinking earlier this week I had a meeting with mortgage lending groups, and I called in agency people from four different agencies to talk to us about the laws that currently exist as it relates to different things in the mortgage lending statute, and that could apply as a public meeting that I would have had to give public notice to. But this is related only to the medical assistance program. Mm-hmm. So we need to keep that in mind. And there was one other question I had. Ms. Shortell indicated this was part of a larger bill from last session that the governor vetoed. Was this element in the bill one of the objectionable parts of the bill that the governor vetoed?
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
My understanding is no, that he had issues with other parts of the bill and that this wasn't the problem.
Okay.
But
great.
I certainly can't speak for the governor.
Yeah, well, the veto, you would have the veto message.
Right. But I haven't looked at that, but my understanding from talking to other people is that was not the issue.
We have some participants in the audience who might be able to tell us that question. I guess what I'm going to just ask them to do is, is Ms. Chartel's understanding accurate? Okay. If
can
that's,
I ask one more
yeah,
question?
You may.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering why this applies to, why we're bringing this bill to make it apply to OMAP. And specifically, was there background given in the discussion of why this is necessary to deal with OMAP?
Yes, Representative Lowe, there was discussion in the committee. Mr. Crawford from OMAP came forward, and there was some discussion. They have groups with the various plans that are participants with OMAP that were involved in discussions about setting policy with respect to drug formulary issues, and people were being excluded from those meetings. And so that was part of the discussion that took place in the meeting as to whether or not people were entitled to have access, public access, to those meetings. And so that was the tenor of the discussion. I think even Mr. Crawford, and I believe he's here in the audience with us today.
Okay.
There he is. And he may want to come forward and address this, and I'm happy to have him do that. But I believe he believed even that the prior version of the bill, the non-1 version of the bill, did not necessarily address the very issue that the companies and that the participants were concerned with. And so, I'm happy to bring him forward if he wants to comment on this at this time.
I'm more than happy to take your word for it. But I also...
I don't want to represent that I think he likes the -1 amendments. Let me make that clear. I mean, I wondered
if they have had an opportunity to comment on it or whether or not their internal procedures had already addressed this problem.
Well, I think to get that point, I think we'd have to bring Mr. Crawford forward, and he's welcome to come forward if he'd like to at this time.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Backer.
While Mr. Crawford coming forward, I have a question.
I think we had a conceptual amendment last time, in the original bill in Section 2, Line 6. I think after the word appointed, we added or convened. But I note that the dash 1 amendments has only the word convened. Is there an explanation for that? Is that by plan, by design, or what?
Representative Backman, I can just assume that they decided that, that convened is perhaps even broader than appointed, and so they thought that...
In other words, we didn't need the word appointed.
Right. I think that was the...
Convened would suffice. And
right.
Okay, that's clear.
Representative Ringo.
Thank you. As long as we're on the subject, I am uncertain as to the meaning of the word convened, and maybe if I pulled out a dictionary, that would help. But is it the intent that convene is the person who calls the meeting, or is convening just holding the meeting? And it's good to look in the dictionary. I appreciate Representative Ackland's point on that, and I'm a little unclear.
Well, I'm looking up the word convene, Mr. Crawford. Thank you for coming forward. Do you want to comment on the dash 1 amendments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Hirsch Crawford, the administrator of the Office of Medical Assistance Programs. And, Mr. Chair, I do appreciate your recitation of the discussion that we had in the subcommittee meeting. And our primary concern with this bill is that it is intended to address a specific meeting that is held by the medical directors of the managed care plans which participate in the Oregon Health Plan. The medical directors of those plans meet on a monthly basis to talk about coordination of health care issues among the HMOs that participate in the health plan, best practices, prevention activities, quality improvement activities. And those meetings are completely open to anyone who wishes to attend. However, the medical directors appoint from among their members a pharmacy work group, which is a subcommittee of the medical directors meeting, and they do meet to talk about drug issues, coordination of pharmacy issues among the plans, and they certainly talk about drug formularies that each of the managed health care plans use. The drug manufacturers have asked to attend those meetings in the past, and the medical directors felt that the free and open discussion that occurs in that meeting would be inhibited if the drug manufacturers were there. They also felt, at least some of the managed care plans felt, that there were some proprietary business arrangements with respect to how they purchased drugs and how much they paid for drugs and what kind of discounts they got for drugs and how they operated their formularies, that they would be less willing to discuss in a meeting if the drug manufacturers were there. And so they have declined to permit the manufacturers to attend those meetings. However, the just like all of the subcommittees which report to the medical directors, the results of the pharmacy work group subcommittee are reported in the public meeting. It's just that the medical directors felt that their discussion would not be as helpful to them if the manufacturers were participating in the meetings, and they have declined to honor their request, and the purpose of this bill is to change that.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford, for coming forward. I think, Representative Ringo, if I can answer your question, at least I'll read you the definition that the Webster's New Collegian Dictionary has for convene or convened, to come together in a body, to summon before a tribunal, to come together in a body, to summon before a tribunal, or to cause to assemble. So those are the various definitions that could be applied. I think that, you know, what the conversation that we had with Mr. Crawford at the subcommittee level on this issue was concerns that this group, and I think he put on the record last time that while it wasn't OMAP per se that chaired or ran these meetings, that they did have staff who were essentially assigned to take the minutes and put together the record and the like. And these are people who are discussing essentially their relationship and their contracting relationship under their relationship with OMAP as state contractors, and there was clearly concern, I think, on the part of the people being excluded from this meeting that there were policy decisions essentially being reached in almost I don't want to suggest that it was that it's necessary collusive sort of conduct, but we did have sort of a discussion about whether or not you know, people all getting together to talk about how they're going to administer a particular contract within a state program ought to be something that's done in sort of behind closed doors without access to the people who are potentially going to be affected by that contract relationship. I don't have a problem with shining a little more light on that process. And if people are a little more circumspect about what they say because people are attending the meeting, I'm not sure that's necessarily all bad. So that's my take on it. Representative Lowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you reading the definition of the word convenes, and a thought occurred to me. Do you believe that the definition covers a situation where the conference or a communication takes place telephonically or through teleconferencing or by other electronic means?
I believe it would, yeah. I don't think that with today's technology, convene necessarily has to mean in public, in person, in a face-to-face.
I think that that, too, ought to be made a part of the record.
Okay. That's a good point. Any other discussion?
I just make a point, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Ringo.
It's hard for me to understand exactly the dynamic of the meeting that is the subject of this bill. But you're right. There was much more discussion in the civil sub about the one specific meeting that this is targeted to. My understanding is that meeting is generally all private company representatives for health care companies or HMOs, and that there's a representative from OMAP there. Excuse me. And I think it seems to me that if we were to pass this, we would simply have those people meet. Boy, if this would only do the trick. Thank you.
Well, we have some pharmaceutical people.
It's a rare moment that we get Representative Ringo almost speechless.
So. Yeah, I know.
I'm trying to help him the best I can.
It just seems to me that you would get these the private folks to meet on their own without the state representative there, and that if there is any collusive discussion, it still is going to occur, just in a different context. And if anything, you just make it inconvenient for the Oregon State OMAP folks.
Well, that may be true, Representative Ringo. The same could be said of virtually all aspects of our public meeting law, that it creates simply a mere inconvenience, and that if people want to have meetings essentially outside the discussion, or, for example, if in fact there is some sort of collusive activity taking place in these meetings, people will find other ways to collude. If that is in fact what's happening, you're probably right. But all we can do, I think, is sort of make a public policy choice about expressing our intention that there be, you know, an openness in this process that allows the various interest groups, even those who might be opposed to each other and who are theoretically in competition with one another, to let that sunlight in a little bit and let market forces sort of manage that process. I'm willing to send this, if all it is a message, I'm willing to let that happen. And if it turns out to be more than that, that's for somebody else to come forward and to bring to our attention, I think. Representative Walker?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm just nodding my head in agreement with you. And
oh, okay. Well, that's nice. It doesn't always happen, so it's nice when it does. Representative Ackerman.
Yes, I just needed some explanation for the expansion of the scope in the Dash 1 amendments, where advisory committee is expanded to be, quote, similar group, close quotes, and where this similar group can also be composed of persons not employed by the public body, presumably could be public private persons. Can somebody tell me why the scope is expanded that far to other groups and to people who could be just private persons?
All I can say, and perhaps counsel might be able to help out a little bit, but I think Representative Ackerman, one of the concerns was to get to the issue that, to some degree, to the issue that Representative Ringo raised, that, you know, if you simply sort of rename or restructure it, then you can argue that it doesn't fall within it. So similar group, I think, was to address, you know, the possibility of this being restructured in some way that would be outside the prior definition. But, you know, I think the definition is a meeting of an advisory committee or a similar group, if they're not going to call it an advisory committee, convened to make decisions for, conduct policy research for, or make recommendations on administration or policy related to the medical assistance program. I mean, so I think they just basically said we want a definition broad enough that if they don't call it an advisory committee, if they call it something else, because right now I think it's called an advisory committee. So if it's not called an advisory committee, but it's still making recommendations on administration or policy related issues, they want that to be within the definition.
I understand your explanations, but I think I'm interested in what the substantive change means. For example, if this agency wanted to hire a consultant to make policy recommendations, and a consultant was privately employed and would confer with two or three other persons, then they're subject to the public meeting law, and the free exchange of communication might be thwarted with lobbyists or contending interests would appear at these meetings. This is what I'm concerned about. If it's the thrust of this to open up private meetings of persons of in groups which are going to make decisions or make policy groups for a public agency, then I think we should call it what it is and say, well, we're opening up the public meeting law to meetings of private groups. If that's what we're doing, then I need to know what the implications of that are.
Well, I think, you know, I'd first say that I think here we are strictly relating it to the medical assistance program and to not any other area. I think the purpose purpose of that, I think, is that this is an area, at least, that's been identified where, because, as you point out, there are a number of private-public relationships and consultants and that sort of thing involved, that there is concern that these sort of policy decisions are being made sort of without the aspect of the public meetings law. And subsection 2 tries to limit that by saying, you know, we're not talking about sort of the single consultant, but where this group is starting to make public policy recommendations and there are three or more individuals who are not employed by the public body involved in this, that if we're going to start letting sort of non-public entities make public policy recommendations, when it gets to that sort of a level, it becomes subject to some notice requirements.
Maybe somebody could also familiarize me with any testimony that took place on this issue, if any, since I'm not a member of the civil subcommittee. I just have a deficit of information here to make
sure.
A decision.
Sure. Well, I think the testimony came forward from the entities that are being or that feel as if they are being excluded from the group in support of the bill, and they believe, you know, rightly or wrongly, that there are decisions being made about formulary kinds of issues within this group of providers, where the agency is essentially facilitating the discussion and being present, and they're not being able to sit in and sort of hear what those policy determinations are, and that they're being excluded from this discussion. And then Mr. Crawford came forward and talked about his concerns about the bill and not believing that it's in its original version, it would likely address the issues that these people had raised. And then he and I had a discussion about the activity occurring in this meeting. I suggested that if it was activity in which people were making determinations about prices or about, these are plans and programs that are competitive with one another, and if they were all getting together and sort of fixing what they were going to pay and who they were going to buy from and that sort of thing in a group setting, that I had concerns that that might be in violation of certain antitrust laws, including the Sherman Act. And he disagreed with me on that point, as I recall. But nonetheless, we had that sort of an exchange. And I believe that, you know, if you let people into those meetings, you'll determine whether or not that there are discussions that might be in violation of the Sherman Act. That was essentially the tenor of the conversation that took place.
What was the agency position on this?
The agency on the bill itself?
well, on the dash one amendments?
We had Mr. Crawford forward. I think it would be fair to say that the agency opposes the dash one amendments.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, Chair would move the adoption of the dash one amendments of House Bill 2945. Is there any discussion? Any objection to the amendments? Okay. What's the pleasure of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Vicki Walker.
I'll move House Bill 2945 to the floor with a deep house recommendation.
As amended.
As amended.
As amended.
Representative Vicki Walker moves House Bill 2944 as amended to the floor.
2945.
I'm sorry, 2945. To the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Anne, would you call the roll?
No.
Representative Backlund?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative Ringo?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Speaker?
Aye.
Chair Williams?
Aye. House Bill 2945 as amended goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I will carry the bill. Before we disband committee, I want to reopen some hearings to allow Representative Krieger to be able to cast his vote. Someone can hand me the agenda real quick. Chair seeks unanimous consent. Some of these we referred to Ways and Means, so you're not going to care about those.
Okay.
But the ones that we did to the floor, Chair would request unanimous consent to suspend the rules to reopen the hearing on House Bill, the work session on House Bill 2409 to allow Representative Krieger to vote. Any objection? Hearing none, Representative Krieger, how do you vote on House Bill 2409?
Yay on that one.
Okay. Chair would also seek unanimous consent to suspend the rules to allow Representative Krieger to vote on House Bill 2665. Any objection? Hearing none. Representative Krieger, how do you vote on House Bill 2665?
Aye on that one.
He votes aye. The rest of them all went to Ways and Means.
Fine.
Or revenue. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to adjourn.